Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Commerce Township, Michigan, and earned a communications degree from Grand Valley State University. She and her husband, Jeff, have a daughter and two sons. In 2008, their youngest son, Joseph, was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. She then founded Team Joseph to fight this disease, which is the most common degenerative genetic muscle disease in boys. Her name, Marisa Penrod, and we're honored to have her as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Marisa Penrod, the CEO and founder of Team Joseph. Marisa, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's great to be here.
Can we start by talking about your mom and your dad and your childhood?
Well, I grew up right here in the suburbs of Detroit to a stay-at-home mom and a dad who was a teacher for 35 years. I am the youngest of six kids, so grew up in a very busy, active, fun household, and spent most of my life here on this side of the state, except for a little bit of time on the west side.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
I think probably the biggest thing I learned from my mom is that you can try anything, you know, not to be timid, not to hold back, but to truly think you can go for it and that anything is truly possible. I think for my dad, I probably learned the most about being educated, and not in necessarily just a formal way, but in terms of being well-read and being open to new ideas and reading a lot, having good long discussions. And from there, I probably learned the most about being compassionate and understanding of other people.
You majored in communications. Why?
I did. Well, I loved, I started in that direction because I loved to write. And it was a natural, it was just a natural path for me. I love to tell a story, and I think that goes hand in hand with communications. I enjoy people, I love to be around people, and that's what eventually led me into teaching, was that passion for educating and for working with people.
Tell us about your husband, Jeff, your daughter, Katie, and your oldest son, Sam.
Sure. My husband is a teacher as well. He is a football coach, a track coach. My daughter, Katie, is 16 and a wonderful, wonderful person. Somebody I actually, I think that as much as I'll teach her, she'll probably teach me more. Our son, Sam, is 13 and just entering eighth grade, and a great, great kid. He's a beautiful spirit, very active.
What kind of football team is this Wall Lake Central going to have this year?
Oh, Jack, you're asking me to enter dangerous territory. I think they're going to be a great team. They have some young players and a little bit of inexperience, but they've got a great coaching staff.
Are you a passionate, interested party on the sidelines, or?
Well, I am. I've been involved in the sidelines, so to speak, for, you know, over 20 years. So I'm a pretty diehard fan. I'm pretty loyal, and our kids as well like to be around it. You know, it's sports are one of those things that take up a lot of time. So you have to sort of work your family life around that. So we try to stay really involved.
And you have a second son named Joseph.
Yes, we do.
Tell us about Joseph.
Well, Joseph is 9. He will be 10 in September. He is our youngest. He is entering fourth grade, and he's a special child. He's a lot of fun. He's got a great sense of humor. He loves music. He loves to play baseball. You know, he loves to play football in the backyard, and has a lot of friends. Is very well loved, and well liked.
Let's go back to late January 2008, and you go to the neurologist one day.
Yeah, so actually the story starts just about 24 hours before that neurologist. It started at our pediatrician's office. Joseph had really never started to run as a child. And when he was four, we noticed this. And, you know, he was the youngest. We had two other children, so I didn't want to compare him to anybody else in the family. But he did seem to be lagging behind developmentally. So I asked our pediatrician what she thought, and she said, you know, it's probably a developmental delay. He might need a little bit of physical therapy, but let's give it some time and see what happens within the year. So when Joseph turned five, he hadn't really progressed at all physically. He wasn't running. He always took steps 2 feet at a time and seemed to need to really pull himself up steps with his arm by holding on, you know, to the railing. And I was concerned that we were seeing things that I thought were minor, but I wanted to address them. So I took him to the pediatrician for what I thought was going to be a sort of a regular checkup, and maybe we would need physical therapy, which at the time I thought was a big deal. Now, in retrospect, now that I've got this different perspective, I realize how minor that would have been. So she did a brief physical exam on Joseph, and she left the room, and she came back in a few minutes later, and she handed me a card, and she said, you know, I'm seeing some things I don't like. You have an appointment tomorrow with a neurologist in Ann Arbor. So immediately as a mother, you know, all the alarm bells go off and red flags are, you know, flying in my mind, and I'm thinking, a neurologist? I mean, we're, you know, that's out of the blue. I think for any of us, even as adults, to hear the word, you have to go to a neurologist, can be a little bit unnerving. But when it's about your child, it's downright terrifying. You know, it's the epitome of that cliche that life can turn on a dime. And it does, and it did. So the next day we had an appointment at a neurologist in Ann Arbor. We knew at that time what they were looking for. We'd had some blood drawn at the pediatrician, and we knew that they were looking for signs of Duchenne, which is the most severe form of muscular dystrophy. So it was just about 18 hours later that we had our worst fears confirmed, that Joseph did in fact have Duchenne.
We're talking to Marissa Penrod. When we come back, we'll ask her about her first thoughts when the neurologist said. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Marissa Penrod. Her and her husband's youngest son, Joseph, in 2008 was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Marissa, when you were told, what were your first thoughts?
That it can't be true. My very first inclination, you know, as a mother, was no. You've got this wrong. This can't be the case. This can't be what's happening. And I had convinced myself of that between the time when our pediatrician said that she was suspicious of this, to the moment, you know, literally, I think it was 18 hours later, where the neurologist confirmed it. I had convinced myself that it just wasn't going to happen, that, it, you know, bad things like that weren't going to happen to us, and it wasn't going to be the case. And I had something really unique happen. So Joseph went to our pediatrician on a Thursday afternoon. They told us we had an appointment with a neurologist that next morning, or on Friday. So Friday morning, I walked our two older kids to the bus stop. And remember, this is in January, you know, in Michigan, which is typically gray and overcast. And I was walking home from the bus stop, and about 8:15 in the morning, and I saw a rainbow in the sky, a huge, you know, horizon to horizon, beautiful, incredible rainbow. And I was so distraught about the potential for this diagnosis that I convinced myself that that rainbow was there for me, that it was a sign for me, that everything was going to be okay, and Joseph was not going to have Duchenne. So imagine my surprise when we went to the neurologist, and he did confirm that Joseph did indeed have Duchenne. And so my first reaction was, you know, a little bit of denial, thinking, how can this be? And, you know, this just can't be happening. And I kept going back to that rainbow and thinking, but what was that for? I saw that in the sky. And, you know, I'm sure there were thousands of other people who noticed it as well. But I had naively convinced myself that it was just for me. So I was a little bit in shock. But interestingly enough, there's some sort of instinct, and I think it's a parental, you know, not just unique to moms, but I think for parents in general, there's something that happens, something shifts almost instantaneously, and that was my will to fight for Joseph. And so when the neurologist sat us down and he told us this news, and he said, so we're going to send you to a specialist. And I said, okay, when do we go to the specialist? You know, how soon? He said, well, it will take about 8 weeks to get an appointment. And I said, 8 weeks? You've just given us the most devastating news imaginable. And now you want us just to go home and wait 8 weeks? And I said, what do I do for 8 weeks? And he said, just go home and enjoy your son and just, you know, live your life. And I kind of dug my heels in and I said, oh no, I am not waiting 8 weeks to see a specialist. And he sat back in his chair and he real calmly looked at me and he said, Marisa, that's just the way that it works. You're going to have to wait 8 weeks. That's how it works. So I sat back in my chair and folded my arms and I said, that's not the way it works anymore. I am not waiting 8 weeks. And, it was kind of, I think my fear was sort of turning into fuel of, you know, if my son's going to have this, you know, I'm going to advocate for him. And so I told the neurologist, I said, I'm not leaving your office until you get us an appointment. So I can spend the night here if you'd like, but I'm not getting out of this chair. And I said, you can email the specialist, you can call him, you can text him, you can Facebook him. I don't care how you find him, but I'm not leaving here. And he kind of smiled. He said, okay, well, let me send him an email. So I always joke now and say, you know, in retrospect, I think he was probably emailing security saying, come and take this woman out of my office. But what happened was, you know, he said, give me till tomorrow morning and I'll get you an appointment. So I reminded him how serious I was. And I said, if I don't hear from you by noon tomorrow, I'm coming back and sitting in this office again until I have an appointment for my Joseph. He called me the next morning himself at 9 a.m., said, you have an appointment on Monday. And it was really the first sort of this awakening for me that, you know, when you're handed these kinds of situations, you have some really critical decisions to make. And it's either you're going to go along for the ride and you're going to let them kind of happen to you or wash over you, or you're going to really sort of try to take back control and say, okay, here's how we're going to navigate this. And it involves, you know, partnering with the medical community and really having a sense of direction for how you want things to go.
3 weeks after he told you that, you wrote this. The neurologist told us this devastating disease was progressive and degenerative. There was no treatment and no cure. I viewed everything he told us as the history of the disease. The future of the disease was unwritten, and I committed myself to helping shape it. Tell us about Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
Well, it's one of those things that you hear about a medical diagnosis and you're given a lot of statistics about how it's progressive and it's degenerative and, you know, all the things that come along with that. Duchenne is a disease where boys are missing part of a gene that produces a protein and it protects muscles. That's the simplest way to explain it. And so what happens over time is that as they just do normal childhood things like walk, their muscles are breaking down and the body does not have the ability to repair it. So for you and I, if, you know, I just jogged up the steps here into this studio, I would have little microscopic tears in my muscles. And while I'm sitting here, my body would repair those muscles without me really even having to do anything. It's, you know, one of the miracles of the human body. Boys with Duchenne don't have that ability. So there are all sorts of things that go along with that. You know, the heart and the lungs are muscles. So ultimately, there's involvement, cardiac and pulmonary involvement. And so I thought about all the things this doctor was sharing with us and how devastating it could be. And I thought, you know, statistics are always a story of the past. That's where statistics come from. They're a culmination, they're a summary of things that have already happened. And I thought, you know what? The future, nobody knows the future of this disease. At any moment, a scientist could have their, you know, aha moment. There could be a solution. There could be a treatment or a cure. And that was really where my mind went, was not focusing on what had already happened, because I couldn't change that, but focusing on how can we have the biggest impact on the future.
Then you go on to create Team Joseph. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Team Joseph.
Well, you know, the name was really sort of what I call a happy accident. When I was talking to friends and family and giving them updates, you know, in the very soon after Joseph's diagnosis, it was mostly by email because I couldn't physically speak to everybody on the phone. There were too many people we wanted to talk to and too much information to share. So I was sending emails to my family, and I was saying, we're going to need to form, you know, a team. We're going to need to become a team of people who want to help. We need everybody to be on Joseph's team. And I would just sign, you know, my emails, you know, let's go Team Joseph. And it stuck. And it just sort of took on a life of its own. And I think that's because everybody likes to be a part of a team. People want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And so when I incorporated and I, you know, became a 501c3 nonprofit, it seemed to be the most logical choice for us just to keep the momentum with the name Team Joseph.
If you want to learn more, www.teamjoseph.info. www.teamjoseph.info. We're talking to Marisa Penrod, who believes, and I quote, "We can't decide what we are handed, but we can decide how we handle it." And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Marisa Penrod. And this coming Thursday in Brighton, August 23rd, there is a special event for Team Joseph. Marisa, tell us about it.
This is a great event. We are thrilled about this. Coming up on Thursday, we have partnered with the Detroit Wine Organization, as well as Ken and Kristen Lingenfelter, to bring you an event called In Vino Speranza, which means in wine there is hope. And how much more fun could that be? Wine and hope all packaged together. It's at the Lingenfelter Car Collection in Brighton. Ken Lingenfelter has a phenomenal collection of vehicles, over 150 cars, including a whole lot of Corvettes, classic cars, exotic cars. He's got Lamborghinis and Ferraris. He has a Bugatti, and it's a beautiful, beautiful car collection, which he so graciously, he and his wife Kristen, have opened up to us as the venue to host a wine tasting. The Detroit Wine Organization comes in. There is, I think, over 70 wines, as well as craft beer. So if you're not a wine drinker, no excuses. We have beer and non-alcoholic drinks as well. We'll have some great restaurants there serving food. There will be live music. It's a really wonderful event, and all proceeds will go to Team Joseph. And our primary mission is to fund medical research, you know, to come up with a treatment or a cure for Duchenne. And we've got some great projects that we're ready to fund.
If you want to learn more details, www.teamjoseph.info. And there is someone scheduled to attend.
There is someone scheduled to attend, a very special someone to Team Joseph. Detroit Tigers starting pitcher Rick Porcello has been incredibly generous and gracious to Team Joseph. He learned about Duchenne, and in particular here in Detroit, about Team Joseph, and has lent himself to our cause and is willing to help. He is our honorary chairman for the event. And the Tigers have a 105 game on Thursday, so Rick will leave that game and come on right over to the car collection, and we'll be there in attendance. So we're really excited about that.
He's also doing something called Strikeout Duchenne. What's that all about?
He is. Well, you know, I got to tell you, for Strikeout Duchenne, it's inspiring to me because it's helpful to Team Joseph, but it's also incredibly inspiring because you know, this young professional athlete has really lent himself to our cause. Rick is personally matching donations that people make to Strike Out Duchenne, and you can also find out about that on our website. We have prizes, you know, tickets to Tiger games, signed memorabilia from Rick for when people make donations. For every donation that's made, up to a total of $10,000, Rick will personally match it. So, you know, what a great guy, what a great reflection on the city of Detroit and our professional sports teams here. We're honored to have him involved.
www.teamjoseph.info. Marisa, when a couple asks you about Duchenne, what are the first one or two questions these parents ask you?
That's an interesting question. Sometimes people don't ask a question. They more just want to share their feelings. So you're talking about if they've been affected by it, right? If they've have a new diagnosis. Sometimes I think people are just in shock. And the greatest thing I've learned is, as somebody who's experienced this, is, you know, not to try to tell them everything that I've learned over the last 4.5 years, because this is a process and it's a journey. I found that not just when people are affected by Duchenne, but by any tragedy, because let's face it, you know, there are struggles and tragedies everywhere. You know, a lot of people are climbing a mountain of some sort. People just want to, sometimes they just want you to listen. They want to know you're hearing them. I think one of the things that people do ask when they do ask a question is, you know, do you truly think there's hope? And, you know, hope's one of those funny words. Some people think that it's very inspirational. Some people think hope means it's, you know, it's kind of passive and you're waiting for something to happen. And I always tell people that there absolutely is hope. I mean, if there wasn't hope, what kind of, you know, what's the point of going on every day if you don't have hope? But one of the things I try to convey is that I believe in that there will be a miracle for Duchenne. I really do. I believe it with at my very core. But hope, belief, thinking there's going to be a miracle, those things are never, in my mind, intended to be passive. So what I like to share with people most is that if you are praying for a miracle, you have to participate in that. That's not something that, you know, you just go to bed at night and you pray for and you think it's going to show up on your doorstep the next morning. Hope and miracles and belief, those are things that you have to participate in. You have to be a part of. So I encourage people, you know, wherever they are, whatever stage they're in, whatever they're capable of, to be involved and to do something that will help them feel like they are changing the course of this disease. You know, one of my favorite quotes comes from a Roman warrior, and he said, "What we do with our lives echoes in eternity." You know, and to really make an impact, I think you have to care about a world that you may never see. And that's the ripple effect of doing something good and of truly leaving a legacy. And I think that's how I get out of bed every morning, is feeling like we are really going to make a difference with what we do with Team Joseph.
One boy in every 3,500 will be diagnosed with Duchenne. What has your son Joseph taught you, Marisa, your husband Jeff, Katie, and Sam?
That's a great question. I think what I've learned most and what he teaches me every day is to live in the moment. You know, the bottom line is, for all of us, we are, you know, I went through the stage of thinking, how could this happen to us? You know, bad things only happen to other people. Those, you know, really naive notions that we hold tight to. And the bottom line is, we are all one doctor appointment, one phone call, one knock on our front door away from being brought to our knees. You know, there's the potential there for all of us to face some kind of great struggle or tragedy. So the thing that it's taught me most is to live in the moment, you know, to be happy. And I've actually had somebody say to me once, you know, sometimes, Marisa, I'm not sure, you know, you truly understand how serious this is because you're still so happy. And I would say, no. You know, happiness is a decision. It's not, you know, someone doesn't come and, you know, sprinkle fairy dust on me at night and I wake up and I'm happy. Sometimes you have to work at it and you have to live really consciously. You know, and I always think about how do I want my kids to remember this journey, and what do I want to be teaching them along the way? And that comes from Joseph, living in the moment, truly being happy. And he is a happy, happy kid.
We're talking to Marisa Penrod. Marisa, recently I read a little book by Jean Vanier, V-A-N-I-E-R, entitled From Brokenness to Community. And he says, it's my belief that in our mad world, where there's so much pain, rivalry, hatred, violence, inequity, and oppression, it is people who are weak, rejected, marginalized, counted as useless, who can become a source of life and of salvation for us as individuals, as well as for our world.
I agree. You know, that's a beautiful sentiment. And something I've been through as a mother is, you know, you want to question this and say, why? And I found out pretty quickly that that was a little bit futile to say, you know, why us, why Joseph? What I really try to focus on is, what now? What do we do with this? And I've decided that, and because I've seen evidence of this, that, you know, Joseph's got a mission. And I think it's beautifully reflected in that quote that you just read. And I think his mission is to give people a chance to show how good they are. You know, every step of the way, we've been absolutely blessed with people who've been generous and helpful and loving and kind. You know, and when I first told our kids about this diagnosis, our oldest daughter said to me, she was in middle school at the time, so, you know, you just want to fit in. You don't want to be different when you're in middle school. And she said, oh, Mom, when people find out about this, will they treat us differently? And I don't know how I had the presence of mind to say this, but I instantly said, absolutely, they will treat us differently. They'll treat us better. And I told her, I said, you will experience love and friendship, and you will see goodness in people that you never would have had the opportunity to see had we not been faced with this challenge. And I think that, you know, a broken body does not mean a broken spirit. And it is sometimes through the people who the perception might be on the outside, on the exterior, that they're weak or there's something wrong. When people really take the time to get to know Joseph, they see a beautiful spirit and a strength of will and a big heart that he changes people's lives. He really does.
We're talking to Marisa Penrod, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Marisa Penrod, the founder and CEO of Team Joseph. 3 years ago, I had a lady, Cynthia Kidder, on the show, and her son, Jordan, has Down syndrome. And Cynthia said this, quote, having a special needs child doesn't mean you can have a good life in spite of, but a good life because of. Marisa.
It's true. I love her spirit. I love what she said. Yeah, you know, those are decisions that you make. That's the epitome of choice, is when you're faced with something like this, you get to decide what you're going to do with it. Not if you get to keep it or not. I love to hand this back to someone and say, oh, here, you know what? I don't really want Duchenne. You can take it back. But you don't do that. So you figure out how to navigate, how to, you know, walk this path, walk this journey, and not avoiding it, but because of it. And that's, you know, embracing it. Somebody asked me once if I'm afraid all the time now. And really, it's the opposite for me. I'm almost fearless. It's when you feel as though you don't have anything to lose that you become very, very empowered and unafraid to try things and to ask people for things and to be humble enough to say, I don't know how to do this. Will you help me? And those are all because of scenarios. It's because of Duchenne. And I've said this often, that it seems natural that as a mother, I would resent Duchenne. And I have my moments. I do have my moments. But in general, day to day, you know, most of my waking hours, I don't feel an incredible resentment. I feel a sense of gratitude for what it's brought into our world. I mean, we have been surrounded by compassionate people. We have been, people have reached out to us and offered to help. We have seen the absolute very best in people because of Duchenne.
There's a 29-year-old Australian, Nick Vujicic, an unbelievable human being, spoken to tens of millions of people. He may be the next Billy Graham. And he was born with no limbs. And the last time he was on, he said, Jack, if you put a G and an O in front of disable, you get God is able. Marisa.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, when you're faced with something like this, God very quickly comes into the conversation with a lot of other people. And people have said to me, you know, are you mad at God? Do you shake your fist at him and say, you know, how could you do this? And, you know, I always kind of chuckle and say, I don't have time to be mad at him. I need him on my team. We need him on Team Joseph. So, you know, I don't want to alienate him. I don't want to walk away from him. I think it's a partnership. And again, it's, you know, it's believing in the possibilities and, you know, believing in miracles, but knowing that you have to be an instrument of miracles. You can't just, you know, I certainly pray every night before I go to bed. I kneel next to Joseph. And I lay my hands on his legs, and I pray for a miracle. But more than that, I pray for guidance about what am I supposed to be doing. And I think it's a partnership. I don't think we just hit, you know, can sit around and be passive and wait for God to perform, you know, a miracle we're waiting for. We have to go out and search for the pieces of that puzzle and help put them together.
We're talking to Marisa Penrod, www.teamjoseph.info. Marisa, I've been struck over and over by families with a special needs child.
Mm-hmm.
And they refer to that child as hero, angel, teacher, inspiration, a gift from God. Why?
I think just because they are. I think it. What happens when you're faced with this kind of a situation, and you know, you say special needs child, and let me tell you, as a mother of three, they're all special needs. They all have special, you know, unique characteristics and needs, and you know, we have to figure out how to navigate parenting all of our children. But what happens when you're faced with something that, you know, is potentially devastating? It forces you to prioritize. It forces you to really sort of put everything in your world through this sort of sifting and sorting. What's important? What really matters? And so if you pay attention and if you try to live consciously, you really get to a point where you know what matters most. And that is a gift. And I think some people spend their whole lives and they never get to that point. Of understanding and embracing what truly matters at the end of the day.
Periodically, you go to the east side to the gravesite of Solanus Casey.
I do.
And recently, something happened.
I do. So occasionally, I'll go down to St. Bonaventure in downtown Detroit, and I spend time there at the grave of Father Solanus Casey, who was known to be a healer. And some time ago, I was there, and I was having a particularly rough day, as I have occasionally, and I was trying to sort of find my way and figure out what was I supposed to be doing. And I was praying at the tomb of Father Casey, and I stood up to go, and a woman who'd been there, she grabbed my elbow, and she said, "Excuse me, I need to speak with you." And so I turned to her, and she said, "You know, I don't know why I came back in here and why I'm speaking with you now," she said, "but I was here praying, and I left, and I was in the parking lot, and I felt as though somebody in here needed me." And she said, "I walked back in, and I saw you," which is me. She said, "I saw you praying at the tomb, and I knew that you were the person that I was supposed to come back in here and talk to." And I kind of, you know, joked and said, "That's because I was crying the loudest, right?" And she said, "No," she said, "I just knew there was some sort of energy. I could feel it." And she said, I'm supposed to give you something, and I don't know why. And I could see visibly that she was a little bit shaken and a little bit uncertain of herself, but she really was feeling the call to come back in and speak with me. So she opened her purse, and she pulled from her purse this little blue book. And she said, I've had this prayer book, you know, forever. It's my favorite prayer book, and I have a favorite prayer, and for some reason, I think you're supposed to have it. And so she opened this book and into this page where it was dog-eared, and it was obviously very well-loved and well-worn. And she held it out to me, and she said, I think you're supposed to have this. And she said, do you ever pray? And now I see the headline at the top and of what the name of the prayer is. And she says, do you ever pray to Saint Joseph? And so now I started sobbing. She showed me the book, and I said, that's why I'm here. My son's name is Joseph. And she said, well, I don't know why you're here. I don't know what you're praying for. And she said, but I can tell you, I felt such a strong call to come back in here and to show you this prayer book. She said, this must be it. It must be that God wants you to know he's hearing your prayer. And so I said, where do I get one of those prayer books? I want to have a copy of that. And she said, no, you're supposed to have mine. You take mine. I'm supposed to pass it on to you. You keep it and keep it as long as you need it. And then at some point, you'll give it to someone else.
Marissa Penrad, as our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to a young person who is different?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that everybody's different. We try hard to fit in and to feel like we're, you know, similar to everybody else. It gets, for some reason, gives us some sense of security. But what I would say is, you know, I don't want Duchenne to define Joseph. I want Joseph to define Duchenne in what it is. So I would say to anybody who's different is, you know, don't let the world define who you are. Define what the world is to you.
Marissa Penrod, you are different. You are fearless. You are one phenomenal lady.
Thanks, Jack.
Great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoke. Believe in yourself.